Thanks.
A key focal point for this conference is the notion of critical urban theory, and the panels this afternoon and tomorrow are going to be applying critical urban theory to try to make sense of some of the urban transformations that are going on around the world today. And I think what we're going to try to do in this panel is continue to address the question of what exactly critical urban theory is. When most of us think of critical urban theory, we think of the work of people like Henri Lefebvre, Manuel Castells, David Harvey, and indeed a lot of the people who are here in this room. Critical theory differs from mainstream urban theory. It's not the Chicago school. It has an antagonistic relationship to existing forms of knowledge and existing forms of urban practice. It's interdisciplinary and it's post-disciplinary. But what I want to suggest here and try to excavate a little bit is the analytic content of the notion of critical theory itself. So in other words, when we say critical, it's not just a descriptive term. It has a very distinctive analytic legacy that goes back, at the very least, to 19th century social theory and philosophy, above all the legacy of Marx, and also, of course, the legacy of the Frankfurt School. So I want to address that question today, above all focusing on the Frankfurt School. In the written version of this text, as it now stands, I try to deal a little bit with Marx and what critique means when Marx talks about critique of political economy. Due to reasons of time, I'm going to skip that and focus on the Frankfurt School. Much of the terrain that I'm going to cover on the notion of critical theory in the Frankfurt School may well be familiar to a lot of you in this room. I'm sure there are people in this room who are far more expert on the Frankfurt School than I am. But given the theme of the conference, and indeed Peter Marcuse himself posed one of the questions of the conference as, is the Frankfurt School still relevant today? It seems appropriate to put the Frankfurt School on the table and just simply remind ourselves of what they meant by critical theory. So I spent the last month or so rereading. I haven't looked at this stuff in like a long time, but it was really, it was extraordinary to reread some Horkheimer, some Adorno, some Habermas, and some Herbert Marcuse, and really inspiring and stimulating. So I'm going to sort of report on what I learned in the last month from reading all these different people. One of the main points I want to emphasize is the historical specificity of any approach to critical theory, urban or otherwise. The work of the Frankfurt School, of course, emerged under state monopoly capitalism, or what many of us would call Fordist Keynesian capitalism. And a key question that I think we need to pose in this panel and in the conference is whether, and if so, in what ways, theories developed during that time are relevant to a context defined by an increasingly globalized framework of neoliberalization. The conditions of possibility for our work, and indeed the targets of our critical energies, are arguably very different than the targets, the conditions of possibility and the targets addressed by the Frankfurt School, and we need to deal with these historical transformations. Relatedly, there's the question of how to go from critical theory to critical urban theory. In other words, how do urban questions fit within the project of critical theory? Interestingly, none of the main figures in the Frankfurt School devoted much attention at all to urban questions. For them, critical theory involved the critique of capitalism, the state, and the law, including their mediations, for instance, through family structures, cultural forms, and social psychological dynamics. Now, we can debate about the appropriateness of that approach to the configuration of Fordist Keynesian capitalism. But one of my arguments that I'm trying to develop in some of my work right now is that this orientation is no longer tenable today when we are witnessing nothing less than an urbanization of the entire world, what Henri Lefebvre famously called an urban revolution. In this context, I would argue issues of urbanization are no longer merely one among many subtopics within the project of critical theory. Instead, each of the key methodological orientations and political maneuvers associated with critical theory requires a sustained engagement with contemporary patterns of neoliberalized urbanization around the world. And this is because the very survival of capitalism, the worldwide process of accumulation by dispossession that David Harvey has analyzed so effectively, is today increasingly contingent upon the simultaneous intensification and extension of urbanization at all spatial scales, at all sites around the world. So for this reason, I would argue that the project of critical theory and the project of critical urban theory are today intertwined as never before. accumulation by dispossession and urbanization are two sides of the same coin. So that's the big argument. Let me focus on the Frankfurt School. The notion of critical theory, of course, has a legacy from Marx, but it crystallized in a powerful synthesis during the 1930s with the development of the Frankfurt School. I won't take any time to cover some background details outlining the conditions of possibility for their work. It would also be highly interesting to consider the, in many ways, very different conceptions of critical theory that were developed by different members of the Frankfurt School. But for present purposes, I'm going to make some broad generalizations. So again, based on the stuff that I read in the last month, regarding the underlying model of critical theory that I would argue sort of unifies the tradition, despite the massive disagreements among the different authors. Basically, connecting texts as diverse as Horkheimer's classic 1937 text, Traditional and Critical Theory, all the way through to Habermas's account of the theory of communicative action in the 1980s, with Herbert Marcuse's One-Dimensional Man somewhere in between. Specifically, I would like to suggest that whatever the difference among these writers, and they're profound, all Frankfurt School critical theory entails all of four features, which I'm going to briefly outline. The features should not be understood as totally distinct propositions. They're dialectically interlinked. So what this means is that the meaning of any one of the features can only be understood once all of the features are on the table. But as a mode of presentation, obviously you have to do one at a time. So, critical theory is theory. In the Frankfurt School, critical theory is unapologetically abstract. It is characterized by epistemological and philosophical reflections, the development of formal concepts, generalizations about historical trends, deductive and inductive modes of argumentation, references to historical analysis, and references to different forms of human experience. It may also build upon concrete research, that is, upon an evidentiary basis, whether organized through critical or traditional methods. As Herbert Marcuse wrote in One-Dimensional Man, and I quote, "In order to identify and define the possibilities for an optimal development, the critical theory must abstract from the actual organization and utilization of society's resources, and from the results of this organization and utilization." So in this sense, critical theory is a theory. It's based on abstraction. Importantly, I would argue, critical theory is not intended, in this tradition, to serve as a formula for any particular course of social change. It is not, I would argue, a strategic map for social change. It is not a how-to style guidebook for social movements. It may well, indeed, it should have mediations to the realm of practice. And it is, of course, intended to inform social actors. But we should be clear that the Frankfurt School conception is focused on what might be termed the moment of abstraction. It is at first glance analytically prior to the infamous or famous question, depending on how you look at it, posed by Lenin, what is to be done? The full meaning of this proposition, however, only becomes apparent when we add a couple other propositions. Critical theory is reflexive. In the Frankfurt School tradition, theory is understood to be at once enabled by and oriented towards specific historical conditions. This means two things. It entails a total rejection of any standpoint, positivistic, transcendental, metaphysical, or otherwise, that claims to stand outside of social life. All social knowledge, including critical theory, is embedded and it's contextual. So it's a basic hermeneutic point. But the Frankfurt School goes beyond a simple hermeneutics, emphasizing situatedness and contextuality. For the Frankfurt School, a key question is to understand how critical, antagonistic forms of social knowledge may emerge within a social formation. So it's not just hermeneutics. How do we explain not just our own embeddedness, but our own critical consciousness? What this means is that critical theorists want to understand the social totality of capitalism as being fractured, broken, or more precisely, contradictory. If the totality were closed or non-contradictory, there could be no critical consciousness of it. There would be no need for critique, and indeed critique would be impossible. Critique emerges insofar as society is in conflict with itself, internally fractured by virtue of its own systemic organization. So in this sense, critical theorists are concerned not only to situate themselves and their research within the historical evolution of capitalism, that's an important moment. Equally, they want to understand what it is about capitalism that enables their own and others' critical consciousness. So for critical theorists, the commitment to reflexivity and the diagnosis of capitalism's contradictory character are in effect two sides of the same coin. The one points towards the other and vice versa. This line of interpretation could be developed at length, starting with Horkheimer's 1937 traditional and critical theory, but I hasten to move forward to my third proposition. Critical theory entails a critique of instrumental reason. This is well known. They developed this critique in part in dialogue with Max Weber's writings. They argued against the societal generalization of a means-ends rationality oriented towards the purposive rational, in German, Zweckrational, efficient linking of means and ends without interrogation of the ends themselves. This critique had implications for various realms of organization, technology, administration, but most importantly for what I would like to say, this critique had implications for how they understood the project of critical theory itself and social science. Critical theory entailed a forceful and I think very consistent rejection of instrumental modes of social scientific knowledge, i.e. those which were designed to render existing institutional arrangements more functional and more effective. Instead, critical theorists demanded an interrogation of the ends of knowledge and thus an explicit engagement with normative political questions. Consistent with their historically reflexive approach to social science, they argued that critical theory must make explicit its political and normative foundations. Instrumentalist modes of knowledge presuppose a separation between the knower and the known. But once that separation is rejected, as the critical theorists do, the knower is understood to be embedded within the practical social context that he or she is investigating. Normative questions are unavoidable. So in this sense, the proposition of reflexivity and the critique of instrumental reason are once again tightly interlinked. In this sense, furthermore, when critical theorists discuss the so-called theory-practice problem, I would argue they are not dealing with the question of how to apply theory to practice. On my reading, they are thinking this dialectical relationship in exactly the opposite direction, namely, how the realm of practice and thus normative considerations always already informs the work of critical theorists, even when the latter remains on an abstract level. So this goes to a conversation that I've been having with Peter Marcuse ever since I met him. Theory practice, how do we apply theory to practice would be the standard way of thinking of it. I'm saying that's not what the critical theorists are trying to do, at least as a first cut, and there's one more cut after this. They're trying to look at how practice conditions the development of theory. This brings me to my final point, which hopefully will clarify the diagram that I just put up. Critical theory emphasizes the disjuncture between the actual and the possible. It involves an orientation towards what we might call a politics of the possible, which is actually a phrase that comes from Henri Lefebvre. The theory is oriented towards human emancipation, but not in some abstract ontological or transcendent sense. As Herbert Marcuse wrote in One Dimensional Man, critical theory focuses on, quote, the historical alternatives which haunt the established society. The Frankfurt School critique is thus imminent to capitalism. This is a social form that violently suppresses the very possibilities that it opens up. The task of critical theory is therefore not only to investigate these suppressions and exclusions. Just as importantly, critical theory must also excavate and advocate the emancipatory possibilities unleashed by this very system in order to promote alternative and emancipatory forms of social life. For instance, emancipation in the realm of human rights, free time, sexual freedom, artistic creativity, and indeed the right to the city itself. It's opened up in new ways by capitalism and suppressed. One final point, and this will be my final point, needs to be made about this fourth aspect of the Frankfurt School project, which brings us full circle back to the first proposition regarding the abstract or theoretical character of critical theory. In much Frankfurt School theorizing, the politics of the possible involved a search for a revolutionary subject, that is, the concern to find an agent of radical social change that would attempt to realize the possibilities unleashed yet suppressed by capitalism. Given the Frankfurt School's abandonment of any hope for a proletarian-style revolution, their search for a revolutionary subject generated a rather gloomy pessimism regarding the possibility for social transformation, and especially in the work of Adorno and Horkheimer, a retreat into quite abstract philosophical and aesthetic concerns. Herbert Marcuse, by contrast, presented a very different position on this matter in the introduction to One Dimensional Man. He agrees with his Frankfurt School colleagues that in contrast to the formative period of capitalist industrialization, 20th century capitalism lacks any clear agents or agencies of social change. In other words, for him, the proletariat is no longer operating as a class for itself. Yet, Marcuse insisted forcefully, and I quote, "The need for qualitative change is as pressing as ever before by society as a whole for every one of its members." Furthermore, Marcuse suggested that the rather abstract quality of critical theory, in other words, the point with which I began, precisely reflects the lack of an obvious agent of social change. And he suggested that the abstraction of critical theory would in fact be blunted or maybe even dissolved in the face of concrete historical struggles. And this is a remarkable quote from the introduction to One Dimensional Man. He said, "The theoretical concepts terminate with social change." What does this mean? I think it has massive implications for what we're trying to do in this conference. It helps us reconsider reflexivity, the critique of instrumental rationality, the politics of the possible. Just as the critical thrust of critical theory is historically conditioned and historically oriented, so too does its theoretical orientation, as theoretical, get shaped and reshaped through social and political transformations. It seems to me that Marcuse's position here is identical to what Marx says in a famous passage, I think from the Grundrisse, that if there were no difference between reality and appearance, science would become superfluous. Similarly, Herbert Marcuse seems to be arguing in a world in which revolutionary social change were occurring, critical theory would effectively be dissolved, not in its critical orientation, but as theory, as abstraction. It would become concrete practice. Or to put the point differently, it is precisely because revolutionary, transformative, emancipatory social practice remains circumscribed and limited and constrained that critical theory remains critical theory and not simply everyday social practice. And I made kind of a quirky little diagram let me just zoom forward. Okay. So, theory, practice, theory, practice.